Hello everyone, welcome to another expert interview at the Innovation and Creativity Summit 2017. Today on the line, I'm very pleased to have Dr. Alan Gregerman with us. Alan is the author of several books, including The Necessity of Strangers, and he's also the President and Chief Innovation Officer of VentureWorks. Dr. Gregerman, lovely to have you here.
Greetings, thanks for having me.
No problem. Why don't you let the watchers and listeners know a little bit about you and your background of how you got into innovation?
Oh, no, that's great. Yes. Yeah, so I actually am trained as a geographer. I actually have a bachelor's, a master's, and a doctorate in geography. I was working on my dissertation, which is all about why some ideas spread and gain traction in a variety of places, and other ideas seem to get stuck in the place where they were created. Fascinated by the idea of kind of the variation of kind of creativity and innovation and kind of brilliance all around the world. Hated being a doctoral student, determined to finish, but then determined not to stay at a university. And so I simply left there and kind of started to work with companies and help them to think about how they could bring their best ideas to market.
And how long is the innovation stuff at VentureWorks been around, and what sort of stuff do you do?
Yeah, so we've been around 29 years. And we focus on three different business areas, in a way all tied to innovation. But the core of what we do is we help companies to grow. And I think that's the bottom line for companies. If you could grow without innovating, I think lots of companies would be keen on that, be way easier. So we work on business strategy. We also work on innovation. We help companies to not only figure out how to kind of gain market share and grow in their marketplaces, but what are the fundamental kind of ideas, products, services, solutions, business practices, customer relationships that are going to help them to grow. So we do that. And then we have a bit of a niche actually in helping companies to reimagine the experience their customers have and how they create more compelling value from the moment the customer hears about them to long after they've used a product or service. So that's really kind of in a nutshell what we do. We work in lots of different industries, from hospitality to healthcare to IT, to pharmaceuticals, to financial services, to the paper industry, so a lot of different industries. And we generally kind of apply some different ways of thinking to help companies simply figure out how to grow.
What a lot of people might know you from is your book, The Necessity of Strangers. And you and I had a quick chat before we started out here, and you told me that people underestimate the value and the importance of strangers when it comes to new ideas and innovation. What do you mean by that?
Oh, yeah. So that's a perfect thing to talk about. So we live in kind of a friend and contact-centric world. So we tend to believe that friends and the people we already know are the most reliable source for us thinking in new ways, kind of growing our enterprises, making the right kind of connections, and doing the things that we need to do. My sense is that's kind of a bit wrong. Not that friends and colleagues aren't pretty valuable to us, but it turns out from all of my research and almost all the work that I've done that strangers, actually people we don't know, and particularly strangers who are significantly different than us, are way more likely to help us create breakthroughs than anyone we know. And simply because of the fact that they are strange or strangers to us, simply because they know things that we don't know. Most of our friends actually know most of the same stuff we know. We tend to hang around with people who are an awful lot like ourselves. Most of the folks in our workplaces tend to know an awful lot about what we know because we tend to kind of all gravitate toward overtime thinking and acting the same way. So if I want to come up with fresh ideas, I'm way more likely to do that by finding people who think very differently than I do, who have lots of different background and experience, and who simply kind of engage the world in a very different way.
So you're talking more about interacting with strangers in the sense of getting out of your bubble, or more along the lines of there being this disconnect between internal teams in a company and actual customers and what their needs are?
Yeah, so I'd like to think about it in a couple ways. I mean, I'd hate to think that our customers are strangers to us, but I have to admit lots of organizations that I consult with, it's clear they don't know a lot about their customers, or they know a lot about how their customers used to be. So to the extent that your customers are kind of strange to you, one of the easiest things you can do to actually figure out the kind of the platform for growing your business is spend a lot more time with your customers, finding out kind of what motivates them today, what they dream about, what are the things that make them sad any given day, What are the things that would be outrageously awesome for them if you could make them happen? So certainly doing that's important. So we certainly want to make sure that our customers don't stay strangers for very long. But equally important is we ought to be regularly casting a wider net and connecting with people who just look at the world very differently. And, you know, we're pretty darn lucky today because the internet makes that really possible. I mean, certainly we can network like crazy to find different types of people in the city or community we're in, but we also can simply go online and kind of explore a world filled with people thinking about different stuff. So let's say we discover that there are folks in Singapore who have figured out this awesome way to engage the community by giving small grants to people to recommend any idea they have that would make the community better. We have the ability to connect with those people. We have the ability to connect with people who are working on health technology ideas in a suburb of Paris. We have the ability literally to kind of gain insight from folks in India, Africa, anywhere in the world. So we're only limited by our curiosity about thinking about who's doing something cool, whether right now it relates to me or not. If I can find people doing cool stuff and I can understand what's cool about what they're doing, that gives me a totally different framework for thinking about the stuff that I ought to be doing in my business.
I mean, that makes so much sense when you explain it like that. But the difficulty is when you actually go to companies and you try and convince people who are struggling with that it's a good idea. Because quite often the reaction that I get when you first interact with people on the ground in a company is, well, I'm the expert in this engineering department. That's my job. I know what I'm talking about. I know more about engineering than the housewife in Middlesbrough. How do you then get them to change their mindset of engaging with strangers?
Yeah, so I get them to think about engaging with strangers simply by giving them some ideas that ought to be reasonably kind of relevant to them. So it's going to depend certainly on the organization, but ideas in which people who kind of connected with strangers were able to create some breakthroughs. So I'm used to, you know, I don't in any of kind of the work I do or any of the presentations I give, use PowerPoint slides, but I use a lot of toys. And so let me give you a few examples and the folks who are listening to give you a few examples. So imagine this. So this is an awesome thing here. So this is a helicopter. I mean, this is a toy helicopter. But imagine the helicopter, kind of an awesome idea. The fact that somebody could imagine that there could be something, actually, let me get the propellers working. Somebody could imagine that there could be something that could go straight up in the air from a standing start and then fly forward and hover around and kind of go and kind of rescue people or deliver supplies or hang out with friends. So imagine that. Awesome idea. Obviously an expert, a guy who understood kind of aerodynamics really well. Well, actually, it was a guy who was more curious than he was a genius, a guy named Igor Sikorsky. He was a Russian or Ukrainian immigrant to the United States. And in 1939, he launches this helicopter. And this helicopter, in its first flight, flies for 59 minutes. Kind of amazing. His inspiration? A 2,000-year-old toy. 2,000-year-old toy invented by the Chinese called the Chinese Top. Kind of an awesome thing. You're probably too young, Nick, to remember this, but folks who are closer to my age might have played with this toy when it was like a lightweight wood kind of toy. You simply spun it in your hands and it flew straight up in the air. As an 11-year-old, Sikorsky saw this toy and kept this toy and imagined that maybe 2,000 years of knowledge might someday lead him to getting humans to do the exact same thing. But that wasn't actually all, because then he decided, who are the other strangers, either today or throughout history, who have envisioned humans going straight up in the air? And he came upon this guy, kind of a clever guy, Leonardo da Vinci. You know, we all know if we Google Leonardo da Vinci and we put helicopter, we're likely to see these pictures of a helicopter-like thing that he drew. Never created one. Kind of a funky thing. Probably wouldn't have flown. Did he come up with that idea on his own? Did he know about the Chinese Top? Actually not. But what he did know was outside his balcony in Florence, he saw these guys, dragonflies. The actual living embodiment of a helicopter, except for the fact they don't have propellers, they have wings that flap up and down. They could go absolutely straight up in the air, kind of hang out there, then go forward, then hang out with friends, party maybe, and then come back. And they, cooler than a helicopter, actually can go backwards, whereas a modern helicopter can't fly backwards. So the reality is the folks who think in kind of cool ways and are open to exploring an idea, a world of possibilities tied to the idea they have, are the ones who create breakthroughs. So I simply talk to companies about that. I suggest to them that being curious and being observant and imagining how things come together and being open to going out there and finding things that could come together are likely to kind of change their world. And so a lot of people don't buy into that. A lot of people say exactly what you said. Well, I'm the world's leading expert. Expertise is actually way less important now than it used to be. Because the reality is most new businesses are creating their own expertise. Okay, so I'm trying to figure out in a way how the folks who run all the world's leading taxicab companies, including the amazing taxicabs in London, kind of miss the big wave that is now Lyft and Uber. So how did they miss it? Because they were expert in taxicabs. They weren't expert in GPS. They weren't expert in the shared economy. They weren't expert in thinking about how people want to be mobile. So the folks who kind of think about the world differently and are willing to abandon initially their expertise and then figure out, okay, which part of my expertise is relevant and which part isn't, are the folks who are likely to win. And so I think when companies say, no, we know too much, or we know it all, or what are you going to help us with, then my guess is it's just time to move on. You know?
Yeah. And I mean, just building on that as well, the other thing that sometimes keeps innovation back is people who are experts in a field, they think that what's important is all of the knowledge they've accumulated so far. And in a lot of ways, it goes back to the way we are taught to learn and recite facts. It's all about repeating things that have been proved to be correct previously. But when you need to innovate and look forward, then quite often you need to find ways of breaking that knowledge, or at least building on it and looking forward. So is there any way that you found to help integrate new ideas into companies?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a good question. So I think the companies that are best at integrating new ideas are simply the companies that are open to new ideas and are willing to expose themselves and their people to a lot of different ideas, realizing that a bunch of them won't over time be particularly relevant to their organization. But they're consistently challenging folks to bring new thinking, bring best practices, find examples of places where they can go and visit that are going to get them thinking in new ways about what's possible. So those companies are way more likely to be kind of consistently innovative. What I try and challenge our customers to think about is, what does it mean to be consistently innovative? What's the core of what we do, and how do we consistently make it better until we understand that at some point we have to kind of break it up entirely? And by breaking up entirely, I mean, just think about all the new business models that are out there and how many industries, whether it's kind of the taxi cab business or whether it's the hospitality business, think about Airbnb, kind of a global phenomenon, kind of the anti-hotel, or think about how we get content today. So imagine that. Before, we didn't have access to kind of a world of content. Then suddenly we had kind of these lame ways to get content, in which we had services in which we could actually get a DVD actually mailed to our house, or we could in a red box go and get a DVD out of a red box, or we, or if we're in a small town, we go to the local kind of video store and we get a video. Who does that today? Maybe people in some small towns who don't have access to the internet, but the rest of us are using Netflix or whatever service we use to kind of download basically the entire world of content. So business models at some point change for a lot of industries, and so we have to figure out how to get people to be open to that as a possibility. Always keep an eye toward that, and at the same time be better and better at the core things that we do.
If I can go back to what you talked about right at the beginning about what VentureWorks does, and talking about strategic innovation, because a lot of what we've talked about here is building on one idea, and in the innovation sphere we talk about incremental innovation and sort of sometimes tangential innovation, but when you want to break really past those and think more long-term or disruptive, how do you get people to think outside of these constraints that they have and really go for breakthrough strategic innovation?
Yeah, so I think, you know, it really depends. I like to think about that we have really two different types of customers when I think about it. And most of our customers are fairly large organizations. But the two different types of customers are either the folks who understand, they're kind of innovative organizations who understand we got to keep doing new things, because if we don't, somebody else is going to do a new thing. And so that certainly is a group of our customers. The other group are the folks who suddenly one day go, oh, crap, The world is changing way faster than we realize. We're in a lot of trouble here. We had better reinvent the game we're playing, or we won't be playing the game at all. And then there's this huge group of companies, certainly in the middle, who probably should be reinventing the game, but suddenly feel we can kind of tweak at the margins what we do. Yeah,
things are going just about well enough. Let's just keep going and hope for the best.
Exactly. So if I was to share a little bit of kind of my own learning running a business for 29 years, is probably in the early life of my business, I spent an awful lot of time trying to get all those folks to be customers, you know, because I believed I could convince them that I could help them to be way more innovative and way more successful and grow their business. As I get older, and I don't know if your folks can see what limited hair I have left is actually kind of gray, I suddenly realized, you know, life is kind of short. And so I'd rather work with folks who are super highly motivated. And so I tend to focus on either companies that are super highly motivated because they're about to screw up badly, or companies who are super highly motivated because they're never satisfied that they're kind of doing the kind of next thing in enough time to make it happen. And so I like to think about folks that are continually thinking about that the world is going to change. I mean, I love to use an awesome example. I don't know how much more time we have, but imagine this. So probably a lot of your viewers are familiar with the fact that there's this amazing device that exists and this amazing that enables people who have irregular heartbeats to actually have the chance to have their hearts kind of work kind of regularly. And it's called pacemaker. They probably don't know that the original pacemaker, which was developed by in the early days of this remarkable company called Medtronic, was developed by a team of doctors and engineers with one remarkable insight that got injected to the process that really proves the power of kind of strangers to me. That remarkable insight was that one of the members of the team actually was not great, but a reasonable piano player. And while thinking about how do we get people's hearts to be regular, one day sitting at the piano, he happened to start thinking in a new way about his metronome. And he started thinking about, whoa, this is kind of awesome. Somebody's created this device that actually allows me to play the piano more regularly. Won't make me a jazz pianist, but it'll allow me to play the piano more regularly. That's kind of awesome. What if we could, in fact, create a metronome for a human heart? Aha, ding, ding, ding. So, in fact, they decided to try and do that. And in fact, the first pacemaker was roughly the size of a metronome. People had to wear it on the outside. Over time, it evolved so that it could be implantable. But that's just kind of a minor part of kind of how we need to keep evolving as an organization. Because today, imagine this. Let's say I have a pacemaker, which I don't yet, but, you know, sounds like cool technology. Now, one day I wake up and I don't feel particularly great. I call my doctor, and as opposed to saying to the doctor, can I come in? I don't feel great. Can you do a bunch of tests? The doctor says, how about this, Alan? Let me pull you up on my screen. And so the doctor then pulls up me and my pacemaker, which is Bluetooth enabled, and he sees how my heart's beating. And he says, you know, you're actually right. It's fair that you're not feeling that good. Let me make an adjustment if that's okay. And he reprograms my pacemaker from his office at his laptop, or he could even do it on a cell phone. And then he says, okay, Alan, give it about a minute, then tell me how you feel. Now, before the minute's up, he goes, my guess is you feel better because your heart's pretty darn regular right now. And in about a minute, I go, God, I actually feel much better. That's kind of a freaky cool thing. In essence, what we've done now is we can use the Internet of Things actually to help make our bodies work better. But it's based on 55 years ago, a team of people first looking at a metronome, deciding we can create a metronome for human hearts, then an evolution of that that now enables us to do all these kind of cool things. Well, think of every company needing to do that. Think of needing to do it faster and faster. Think of every company having to figure out, no matter what you do, how you get with the program, how you engage it, you know, with the internet, how you connect with customers in different ways. And so that's what I try and get companies to think about, is simply the power of thinking in those ways, and that we're in a race to continue to create greater value, and the folks that stop running are the folks who are going to lose, and they're going to lose faster than they ever did before.
What about? It's a fantastic example, and I'm sure my viewers and listeners can really relate to that. But what about the companies which are keen on being more innovative, but might be approaching it in the wrong way? Have you got any sort of insights into companies that might be, I don't know, just trying to be like the next Silicon Valley company and hoping that it works for them? Is that actually going to result in innovation?
Well, I don't think it will. And I think what happens is, tied to what you're saying, I think an awful lot of folks believe, and certainly innovation is about creating the right culture, but I still believe most organizations are missing a fundamental part of the culture. So for a lot of organizations, they decide exactly what you've said. Well, the folks in Silicon Valley, they're super, super innovative. And so let's kind of be like these people, because if we can be like these people, let's create an office environment like that. Let's do the types of things they do. Let's bring in all these smart kind of young people, and presumably folks with all kinds of different backgrounds, including folks who are trained in the humanities as opposed to engineering or business. Let's bring all these people together, and then that's going to kind of make it happen. Let's create more flexibility. Let's give them time to fart around, whatever the case is. That's all well and good. But unless all these people are bringing with them a kind of wealth of ideas from other places, once we enter an organization, we kind of get wrapped up in kind of the culture and the way the organization does things. So while I'm doing things every day, it's a little bit hard to say, let me kind of suddenly reinvent the stuff I'm doing. The missing piece from my perspective is that we need regularly just to get out of the office. Even if our office is awesome, we need to get out of the office and see what other folks are doing. Because in the world, people are doing new things all the time. They're doing new things at the cutting edge of lots of industries, whether it's tech industries or the restaurant industry or transforming neighborhoods or transforming mobility or whatever the case is. And we ought to be out there figuring out what people are doing, because the folks who are succeeding have connected with customers in some compelling way. And so the missing piece I find in all these efforts to build kind of an innovative culture is that we miss that an awful lot of the culture that we need to be kind of engaging people in isn't our own culture, it's the culture of other folks. It's the culture outside of our buildings. And so when companies don't do that, then they run the risk of creating this awesome internal culture that over time gets kind of so caught up in how awesome we are and how well we do things, that as the world changes outside our window, we're still looking inside our window.
So, just to be clear, you're saying that ping pong tables are not going to result in more profits.
Ping pong tables might result in more collaboration. They might result in people who don't like each other kind of liking each other or hanging out with each other, but that alone's not going to make it happen. Going, taking our team to talk to the folks at Tesla, or taking them, to a kind of rock concert where 2,000 young people are standing up and kind of super engaged, or taking them to a trendy restaurant in which you get to use technology as much or as little as you want in terms of kind of ordering, paying for your meal, and even picking up your meal. No, so all kinds of things out there are going to keep us young and fresh and thinking in new ways. And I think it's great to collaborate, but I'd have people collaborate by getting out together. The folks who we want to play ping pong together, I'd send them out on a mission together. I'd send them out to explore something cool and then come back and report back on what they learned.
Alan, it's been wonderful speaking with you today. We're coming up to the end of the session,
Uh-oh.
but if you could give, like I ask all of the other experts, if you could give one piece of advice or an actionable insight, a tip for something that the people can do either this afternoon or this week to improve their ability to innovate, what would it be?
Yeah, no, that's perfect. So I'll give one fact that's compelling that I want everybody to think about, and then I'll give one idea. The fact is awesome to me. The fact is the most liberating idea I've ever kind of discovered, and that is simply 99% of all new ideas are based on somebody else's thinking. So if I know that 99% of all new ideas, and that's throughout history, and that's even with the most innovative companies. So think about this. We all think the folks at Apple are brilliant. They don't need other folks. Think about the iPod. Did they come up with the idea for the iPod? Actually, Sony came up with the idea for the Walkman 25 years before Apple ever came up with anything. Did the folks at Apple come up with the technology that drives most of their devices, MP3 technology? No, it's two German engineers in 1986. So even the most innovative companies understand 99% of all new ideas are based on somebody else's thinking. So if that's the case, the tip I would give people is to regularly get out of the office. And I would ask teams of people in the organizations that listen to this to regularly be kind of monitoring what are cool new businesses that are in your community. What are folks starting that's really kind of capturing energy and attention no matter where you are? And go and visit these people and ask them what they know, and ask them what their secret sauce is, and ask them what the fundamental idea that underlies their business model or how they deliver value is, and then use that to think about, could we imagine differently the stuff we do?
Perfect. We're going to just also put all of the links up on screen for where people can go to find out more information about your insights on innovation and the work that you do. Just give them a quick rundown on where they're going to be taken.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, so I have a blog, which is simply alangregerman.com. We have our corporate website, which is venture-works.com. I try to get a little bit better. I'm not super good about tweeting yet, you know, and but, you know, you could always go to Alan_Gregerman, which is kind of my Twitter handle, and I'll try to put up more interesting stuff up there that's like quick and interesting stuff. Yeah, so those are some good places.
Perfect. It's been wonderful having you on the line today, and I'm sure we're going to have another chat sometime soon.
Okay, great. Thanks for inviting me.
Cheers. Congratulations on being part of the Innovation and Creativity Summit. I'm sure that if you continue to watch the other expert interviews, you will experience an improvement in your capability to turn your ideas into something valuable. But don't forget, to get the very best experience and ensure you don't miss any of the priceless lessons, you should invest in yourself with the All Access Pass. Not only will this give you exclusive lifetime access to watch all the lessons whenever is best for you, you will also get all the interviews as downloadable audio files so you can learn on the go, full transcripts so you can read and analyze the great advice and tips, and exclusive bonuses not available to anyone else. Click the link below to get your All Access Pass now.